So these S's in the SMEs are really prone to attack. You also have to remember that the S's in the SMEs, they frequently are the ones with the really cool new ideas, the thing that everybody will want in 10 years' time, but nobody realizes they need now. They're the ones who have that. So therefore, they're going to be the ones that are much more prone to attack.
Welcome to the Digital Manufacturer Podcast, your frontline source for all things digital transformation in manufacturing. I'm your host, Mark Flynn, and I'm here to guide you through the evolving landscape of manufacturing. In each episode, we'll uncover the stories of innovation that are defining the industry, offering insights and strategies that help to drive growth and efficiency. Join us as we speak to thought leaders and visionaries who share their journeys and the lessons they've learned along the way. So let's dive into today's episode and discover what the future holds for the digital manufacturer. Simon, welcome. Simon, you are the CEO of Vertical Structure, an award-winning cybersecurity and information assurances firm. Your services include security consulting, testing, and training to clients, including small startups and large multinational companies. You've extensive experience in helping companies to understand how to grapple with the ever-changing challenge of protecting themselves against cyber threats and helping your clients to find solutions to their cybersecurity problems. You are a sought-after cybersecurity expert, and we are very, very thankful to have you on the podcast today to get your perspective on the industry and how small and medium-sized manufacturers may set off to address this cybersecurity challenge. Simon, hello and welcome.
Hello there. Thank you very much for having me on today. I really appreciate it.
Brilliant. Brilliant. You're very welcome. I read an article, Simon, in the Manufacturing, which is a manufacturers organization publication, that almost half of the manufacturers in the UK and Ireland have been victim of some form of cybercrime over the last 12 months, an almost astonishing statistic. And that fact, over a quarter of the respondents have reported some sort of financial loss as a result of that attack. I wonder if we could just start with maybe you explaining what cybercrime is and why manufacturers should be worried about it.
Absolutely. And again, thanks so much for having me on. It's a subject I'm very passionate about. I love learning more about the world of cybersecurity and what's going on in this industry. And I think one of the things I've been really privileged to do is to learn every day. Every day I come to work, and you're never sure whether you're going to have to learn more about a Russian cybercrime gang or a group of Chinese government activists or something like that. You know, you just never really know. From a manufacturing perspective, cybercrime is going to be problematic for a number of different areas in a number of different ways. I think firstly, around things like the basic form of cybercrime, which is maybe a phishing scam, which takes in the accounts payable people who then pay £10,000 that was due to go to one supplier, it gets paid to a different supplier instead, or gets paid to a cyber criminal instead. So that's the sort of thing that affects and impacts every single person around, whether you're manufacturing, whether you're in services, whether you're in a school, whatever it is, you can find yourself a victim of that sort of stuff. I think one of the areas in which manufacturers really have to be really considering things as well is around the area of intellectual property and what they're actually making. So the thing that they make, your manufacturing company, the thing that they make, they are the best at making that. Hopefully, the best at making that in the world. They have a particular process that they do. They have a particular set of ingredients or things that go into that software. They have a particular set of something that makes them individual. And if that set of intellectual property has been stolen and anybody can then produce it, then surely that's almost like the loss of you as an organization. That's something that you should be very, very concerned about. That particular special source that makes your company the best at what they do is going to be something that you really want to keep to yourself. You want to say separately. So I think that manufacturers especially have a couple of different areas where they need to be aware. And partly that's around the traditional cybercrime area of having money stolen and having goods, things going out the door that shouldn't be. But secondly, around your intellectual property and that real private intellectual property going out the door that shouldn't be viewed by anybody else.
In your experience, what is the frequency at which these cyber criminals attack SME manufacturers? Because one of the things that we hear about in the field from our customers are, we're too small to be attacked. We're not a nation state or a large manufacturer. So it's something that we don't need to be worried about. But from that report, it seems to be more frequent than many think.
Absolutely. It is very, very frequent. And we get calls about it all the time. And one of the things we're always talking to our clients about is that we try to come at this from the positive side. So our job is to help you prevent this from happening. So we work with, yes, a lot more of the M's and the S's in the SME, but we work with an awful lot of the S's as well. And each one of them has something that somebody else wants, whether that's a very profitable company making a whole load of money and they want access to that cash, or whether they are a startup that has just managed to take an investment of $10 million or whatever it is to build the next thing in the manufacturing world, and they have this product that they want to do, but they've received this money. That makes them a prime target, absolutely prime target. They're organizations that don't have secure processes and procedures in place. They don't have that verification, for instance, of bank details before making a payment. It's always just been, here, Mark, you wouldn't do me a favor and pay that invoice, would you? That sort of thing. And these organizations, they're more likely to fall victim than those who maybe have had a focus on cybersecurity or have had a near miss or have had something that they've managed to avoid doing in the past, and managed to avoid getting popped in the past. So these organizations, frequently they're people who they just want to do something cool and their focus isn't on security. As you rightly say, you know, they haven't used the security details out there. What they've done is they've just tried to do it all themselves or just not worried. They'll do that when they get investment or they'll do that later. So these S's in the SMEs are really prone to attack. You also have to remember that the S's in the SMEs, they frequently are the ones with the really cool new ideas, the thing that everybody will want in 10 years time, but nobody realizes they need now. They're the ones who have that. So therefore, they're going to be the ones that are much more prone to attack. Also, just around that, I think that some of the larger companies, the bigger organizations, they will have a lot of money to spend. They'll have a lot of cash to spend on these things. And part of what they'll be doing is to make sure that that's spent on cybersecurity. So I think there's a few different kind of areas of potential concern for organizations, especially in the side of the SME world.
And is it really nation states like Russia and China that are trying to attack my small electronics firm? Or who should I be worried about? I mean, it feels like I should be worried about the Russians coming in to steal my ideas, but perhaps somebody else.
Well, I hate to say it, Mark, but if the Russian state or the Chinese state or the UK or the US really want into your stuff, they're probably going to get into it anyway. To be honest with you, they are very, very good at that stuff. It's unlikely, I should say, you know, they're nice groups of people in the majority and blah, 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 all that stuff. Don't attack us. We're not doing anything wrong. But if they want in, then there's very little you can do. I don't know if you've read about it, but Microsoft are struggling with a compromise on their systems whereby an APT group, an Advanced Persistent Threat Actor, has been in their systems for a long, long time now, for weeks. Looking around, going into customers, finding out what's going on, you know, that sort of thing. And these are attacks that are very, very complicated to get rid of, as, you know, Microsoft, one of the biggest security companies in the world, is demonstrating. But from your point of view, I mean, from the SME perspective, it really does depend. So what are you making? Are you making something that's of interest to somebody who could just fire up a factory and make clones of your stuff very, very quickly and easily and then ship it over from another part of the world? If so, you might be concerned about some country type actors. If you're worried about your money getting stolen and being taken out of your bank accounts, then I'm afraid it's a much broader spectrum of people who are going to be attacking you. The ransomware gangs that we see, they are companies. They are actual companies. They have a group of people who they buy access from, a group called data brokers. And they have affiliates, so they have franchise systems. They have all of these things, and they have a huge amount of money to spend. And an organization like yours, like mine, like these SMEs, what they do is they get in and they threaten to either release all the data that they've got, or they threaten to make you no longer have your own data available to you. And from there, this really bad things can take place. So those organizations, those companies that are out there who are compromising things, or they really want to get access to your systems because they want to get access to your money, they want to get access to your data, and it doesn't matter to them if you're five people or 500 or 5,000. They're more likely to get more money out of the larger ones, but if they can get a few grand out of you as well, then they absolutely will.
That's incredible. I had no idea that it was so sophisticated. Just explain for the audience just what ransomware is.
Sure, no worries at all. So ransomware is a malicious software that It'll get installed on your computer when you click a dodgy link or you download something you shouldn't do. We've seen examples of people who've tried to download movies, for instance, and clicked the wrong link, ended up with something nasty on their machine. And ransomware gangs have evolved considerably over the last while. So ransomware gangs used to do things, for instance, like they would hold your computer to ransom. They would hold your data and your systems to ransom. And that would have meant that you wouldn't have been able to access your data again. Your company would have slowed down and stopped. You would have been in a world of pain. They've kind of changed that a little bit now. What they tend to do is they tend to get access to your systems. They tend to exfiltrate, to steal all of your data. And they tend to get that out into the, and then they put your name up on a website and they say, unless you pay us X amount of money, we're going to release all of your data to the world and anybody will be able to get access to it. And that means everything from payments to internal emails to any of those sort of bits and pieces. So you can really see that ransomware is not going to be fantastic for any organization. We saw with Lockbit recently that even if you pay the ransom, they don't necessarily delete all the data. So Lockbit is one of these ransomware groups. And what we found was that if you paid, their promise was that they would delete all the data. And we're seeing now that that's not actually the case, that they kept a lot of the data that they promised they would delete, that they passed it over to others, that they just kept it to themselves. So it's one of those things, it's a bit like honor amongst thieves. You know, you're kind of an honest criminal. Are they actually making money about this? But how are they making money of this? Well, they're making money by convincing you that they're going to be honest. And actually, they haven't been honest. It's fascinating. So we run a podcast called Cyber Tuesday, and we've recently had the privilege of speaking with people like the ex-head of the National Cybersecurity Center in the UK, the CTO of the NCSC, the cybersecurity director from the White House. And each to a person has said that this is the biggest scourge that we're facing, that all of us are facing, that we're seeing these organizations being held to ransom by these gangs and by these groups. So it's really very much a global issue and a global problem. And if you speak to some of the law enforcement about it, they find their hands are tied sometimes, which can be very, very frustrating. They do sometimes get some great successes, but there are also some areas where they feel they're very, very hamstrung when they try to do these things.
It's really frightening. And is it just these external actors that I need to be worried about when it comes to data breaches and losing my data, or should I be looking closer at home?
Well, I think there's always an issue of internal actors. I think there were some figures from 2017, I want to say, the Verizon Data Breach Survey, the Verizon DBS, very much worthwhile reading. They do a new one each year. It's really, really good. Some of the figures from earlier that I have in my head, because I've used them a lot, but they said something like 25% were committed by internal actors. So that means that 25% were potentially committed by people who you know, trust, work with every day, that sort of thing. That can sometimes cause some disconsolation for people. I think one of the most important things that all of us as organizations need to be doing is we need to be thinking about this principle of least privilege, whereby we don't give access to something unless you absolutely need it. So why do I, I'm CEO of my company. I don't need access to make payments to a bank account. I don't need access to do that. I need access to be able to ask somebody else to do it and them to go through a process to approve that and those sort of things. But I don't need access to it. If I was running a manufacturing firm like yours, you had a selection of blueprints, the blueprints of everything that you've ever made, and it's really secret sauce, safe and secure, then why do I need access to that to go meet a client to tell them how great we are as a company? I don't need that. The engineers need access to it because they've got to update them and change things and make things better. But it's about things like that. And it's especially down to the top level. To the CEO level, to the COO level, or whatever it is we're looking at here. You know, you've really got to be aware of the fact that this principle of least privilege that we're always banging on about in my world is something that we've implemented from the top level down.
I absolutely understand. One of the other mitigations that we hear clients talk about now is they seem to be investing much more in cyber insurance as opposed to cyber defense systems or training internally. Is that going far enough, do you think? Or is that just the tip of the iceberg in terms of what you should be doing in order to protect yourself?
Cyber insurance is really quite tough to get sorted out these days. It really can be. Cyber insurance is something that's very important. I'm not a financial advisor, so I'm not going to tell you which firms to go to or how to do it or any of that stuff because I'm not allowed to and I don't have that knowledge. What I can say to you is my understanding is that there are only a couple of firms who do cyber insurance properly these days. There are only a couple of firms who do it. One of them asks you an awful lot of questions up ahead of time and will do lots of investigation to make sure that you're doing what you say you do. And the other one will not do as much investigation up front, but it will do investigation if something were to happen. And what that will say is, if you've not told the truth on any of your forms, and, you know, or if you've missed something, or if you've said you had MFA in place and you multi-factor authentication in place and you don't, then they will decline the insurance request. And that's harsh, you know, that's how it goes. So what I would say is that it is a very tough thing to get sorted out and to get sorted out right. I would not be wanting to rely on it. I would have it there as, my goodness, everything's gone horribly wrong. We've got to be aware of what we're doing here. But the biggest thing is in prevention. So that's where we sit, and we've deliberately sat there. We don't do instant response. We've got some lovely friends and lovely partners and lovely kind of affiliates who do that instant response. Great stuff. That's them. They're really good at this stuff, and that's very, very important. We try to prevent things from happening in the first place. That's what we're really good at. And we find that training, security and penetration testing, and the side of things, including things like Cyber Essentials and ISO 27001, they are the important thing, because they really help you to understand and prevent these issues from taking place. So whenever we're talking to people, we try to bring out the positive aspects. So there are positive steps that you can take to make the cybersecurity of your company better. One of them is training your team immediately. We're actually going out to a manufacturing organization in the next couple of days to train their entire team about cybersecurity and social engineering awareness. Another thing you can do is test and make sure you know what's going on. Another thing you can do is to do things like cyber incident exercising. So we're an NCSC certified cyber incident exercising organization. One of the things we find is that companies don't do this. They don't look out and find out where things might go wrong. And what I would always say is that it's much easier to diagnose an issue with your processes at 2 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon with a cup of tea and a biscuit in your hand than it is at 3 a.m. on a Sunday when everything's gone horribly wrong. So it's that preparation that for me is absolutely vital. So don't leave it till the last minute. Think about it now and think about what you can do to help protect you and your company.
Let's just take a step back on that, because that is, and I know vertical structure, I haven't worked with you guys in the past. You have a very good methodology for approaching how you mitigate this cyber risk. And it's the prepare, protect, persist. So in the prepare section, is that as simple as training my team, or is there more to that? Like, step me through, if I was a business owner, what I should be thinking about in order to mitigate this risk.
I think the first thing to do is that training. I mean, before you do anything else, is to make people aware. We call our training cybersecurity and social engineering awareness. It's about awareness. One of the things that we have done in the past, and we're not a massive fan of doing it, to be honest with you, is around things like phishing tests. And you can send out some fake emails to people and create these things and ask people to click on them and all that sort of stuff. And you can do it really well, or you can do it really badly. There was an example during COVID where one organization, and I won't say who it was because I can't exactly remember and I don't want to get you in any trouble, but they sent out an email to all their staff basically saying, thanks for working so hard during COVID. It's been a real chore. I know you've done really well. Here is a £100 voucher. Thank you so much for everything you've done. And then they found out, and all they'd won was extra training and a bit of a slap on the wrist for screwing things up and clicking a phishing mail. For me, education and awareness means understanding what to do when you've done something wrong. So what would you do if you have clicked a phishing link? The statistics, the stats for me on phishing are that if you know what to do when you do something silly, when you've clicked that silly link because it looked good, when you've done X, Y, or Z, you know what to do and who to contact. And then they know what to do to fix it. And then you solve the problem. Solving the problem within the first 5 minutes is much easier than solving it after 5 hours, 5 days, 5 weeks, 5 months. It is much, much simpler. So the statistics that we look at are how many people clicked the link, yes, but also how many people reported that they clicked the link. And who did they tell and what did they do? Did they just go click the link and go, oh, I'm in Egypt or whatever? Or did they actually go, Mark, I clicked the link. I'm really sorry. I've screwed up here. We need to do something to fix this. That is the sign of a mature, useful organization who are doing good things together. That is what I would say.
That's very interesting. I never actually thought about the fact that some people might click on the link, realize that they've clicked on a malicious link, but not say anything. And is it simple just as training and awareness, Simon?
We've seen examples where people have reprimanded staff for clicking links. And that's what leads to people being scared if you see what I mean. That's what leads to people not telling you in the future. So if you have a phishing exercise and then you round everybody up in a room who click the link and you shout at them for 20 minutes, then obviously they're not going to tell you about it again next time. They're just not going to. They're going to hide in a bush and pretend they didn't do it. So the training is the first part of what we always suggest to people. We also find that one of the things that we would implement would be around knowing where your weaknesses are. Because if you don't know where your weaknesses are, you can't fix them. Okay. So that's around things like maybe threat modeling, thinking about who's likely to attack me. You mentioned earlier, you know, the Russian state or a group of Chinese advanced persistent threat actors or a group in Western Europe somewhere or whatever. It doesn't really matter. But who are the people most likely to attack me? And therefore, where do I need to spend my money in order to make myself more resilient to these things? So around testing, around things like that, about knowing where things might go wrong. The final side of what we always suggest organizations look at as well is around improvement. Okay, so we work to help organizations to go to things like ISO 27001, which is an information and data security standard, internationally recognized. It helps you with things including everything from physical and environmental security. Can I get into your office if I really want to? Things like when you hire a new person, how do you verify that they are actually who they say they are and not some ne'er-do-well that's looking to get into all of your equipment? How do you work all of those things out? So that's something that we really try to do. What I would say is most companies are better at that than they think they are. That's what I think is really interesting. We get companies coming to us and saying, we could never do that standard because we're rubbish at security. And then you ask them, do you have a lock on your front door? And they say, well, of course we do. Anyone in, we can't just have somebody coming into our office. Of course we've got a lock. When you hire somebody, do you check a reference? Well, yes, of course we check a reference. So therefore, there's two of the controls in the standard that you're meeting. But you have to document that and you have to write that out. And you have to think about it in more detail. You already are better at security than you think, but this becomes a process of improvement and measuring where you think your risks are, dealing with those risks, and then becoming better at it. There's a UK government standard that we also use, that we also work to, called Cyber Essentials and Cyber Essentials Plus. And we're a certifying body and assessor for Cyber Essentials and Cyber Essentials Plus. It's a standard that is brought in by the UK government. And it is actually a requirement now for working with the UK government in many of their contracts. So if you are going for a tender in the public sector, you will be required to have this standard. And it checks the most basic things. And I think one of the things that any organization should be doing is working out what is the minimum I need to do immediately. So we mentioned their training, we mentioned their pen testing, we mentioned various things. Cyber Essentials gives you an understanding of where your infrastructure is from the very basic level. Do you have any servers open to the world? If you do, are they patched? Are they updated? Do you have any users who have administrative privileges? If yes, why? Who are they? Do they use it for their day-to-day job? Do you have anti-malware in place? Do you have mobile phones that are more secure than just a piece of rubbish you pick up off from Argos or wherever? It's about making sure that you've got those basic things in place. The standard itself was developed in order to help people prevent drive-by compromises, as it were. So it's designed to protect you against the most basic internet-borne compromises. So it will help you to understand your base level. And that's really, really important. So from that sort of perspective, there's a really good starting point for you. And when you've got that in place, then you can start to make plans about getting better and going to things like 27001, where you get this updated and more kind of integrated security management system. But yeah, so there are just some things that I would urge all organizations to do. Be aware of your risks and deal with them appropriately.
Very good, very good. I like the idea actually of having the certification drive the behavior and then instill the culture to become more security aware. We've talked a lot about the people and process side of things. Simon, what about technology? Because I mean, sometimes when we're out in client sites, we see legacy technology that's been around for years that holds really important information or is managing a critical process. There's a reluctance to modernize that. We always try to advise our customers by the nature of modernizing their systems, they can avoid a number of these cybersecurity issues and risks. What's your view on that?
Absolutely. And we saw that during WannaCry, where a lot of older operating systems were part of the problem. We also saw it during the Irish HSE compromise a couple of years back during COVID, where they had a massive estate of older machines that were running everything that they did. Now, gone through a bigger process to try to remove all of those things. But the older legacy tech is something that we always see problems with. Organizations should be looking to try to improve what they're doing. So when it comes to legacy tech, we worked with a client a while back and they work in the manufacturing sector and they had a machine that monitored output from another machine. And that's all I'm willing to say about it. But they had a machine that monitored output from that machine. And it was a Windows XP machine running a critical piece of software. Without that, they couldn't do what they did. They weren't allowed to carry on. There were government regulations about what they were doing. So that means that they just have to shut the factory down. So that meant they had to keep this one device that they paid for 20 years worth of support for, that they had to keep it. Their backup plan in case it went down or was compromised was they would bin it and buy a new one off eBay and have it delivered with next day delivery and get it set up. And we're talking millions of pounds a day going down because of a crappy Windows XP machine sitting in a factory somewhere. Yeah. When it comes to things like machines and robots in factories, yeah, we see this all the time, that there are these devices that are running in critical business infrastructure that are running the entire show. We see it in insurance company. The quoting engine that sits underneath that beautiful website is actually running on a AS400 machine that should have been decommissioned in 1991. You know, it's terrifying. Our whole industries are pulled together from these old machines that there aren't any updates anymore. So one of the things that any manufacturer can do is to assess what they've got and then think about how they can update that. So in our view, you know, from our perspective, we go into factories sometimes, you know, into organizations and we set some scanning tools up. One of our pen testers loose and it's incredible what they pick up. Absolutely incredible. It's an incredible thing to see what they're up to. And we really do find that the legacy tech is where a lot of the problems lie. We also find things, however, like especially in factories with shared operating environments, if you want a password, you just lift up the keyboard and there's a post-it note with a username and password on it because one shift person has left it for the next shift person or something like that. So we do still find some of those basic things as well. I think it's also interesting to look at kind of the pivoting side of things. So when our pen testers go into an organization, one of the things they're trying to do is to jump from one place to another to get to the crown jewels. They might come in via the Wi-Fi network with your CCTV cameras on and then bounce from there to the machine that does the makes thing X in the factory and then bounce, which was running on Windows XP, and then bounce from there into the accounts machine because that machine had to have connectivity to the network, and then bounce from there into the accounts machine and bounce from there into the getting money transferred over and things like that. So when you're thinking about this, things are only as strong as the weakest link in the chain. So being aware of those weak links, putting them in a, what they call in cyber essentials, putting them in a locked off area where they don't have any internet access. They call it subset, where you can say, take this stuff and put it over here in a subset, keep it fine, run your Windows XP machines, but don't let it talk to anything else. Don't let it talk to the network or talk to the internet in any way, shape or form. And then you'll find you're in a better position. Still pretty rubbish to be having that stuff there, but you are in a better position for sure.
Wow, that's really frightening. I never thought I would have my ERP system hacked from my security cameras, or even there was a remote possibility.
There was a very recent example of this over the last year or two. There was a casino in Vegas that was actually compromised through the fish tank. So there was a sensor in the fish tank, which was then used to jump out from there into the money section where they stole all the money. So yeah, it absolutely happens. I'm not scaremongering. I'm not talking about anywhere else. I promise you, it is one of those things. It's fascinating.
Crazy. So Simon, what are the three tangible takeaways that you would want the listener to take out of this podcast interview? Like, let's say I'm an SME manufacturing owner. Like, what do I do now from this podcast to trying to mitigate my cyber risk? What are those three main activities I should be thinking about?
First thing we do to be assess your risks, assess what you've got. So where are you most likely to be compromised? If you're SME, a small organization based here in Northern Ireland, you've got a small factory somewhere, have a look at what you've got. Have you got a Windows XP machine running your entire network? If you do, have a think about that. So that'd be the first one, is have a look at what you've got. Where are your biggest risks? As another example, recently we saw somebody who, they were still using a Sage product and they were running it on an old Windows device somewhere. And actually that was the most critical thing because that was what held everything. The fact that they were then using it to browse the web every day and access their email and clicking on dodgy links was probably not a good idea either, but you know, it's those. So that would be the first one, is look at what you've got. Second thing would be train your team. Ask your team to understand a little bit more about what you're asking them to do. So that can include everything from talking to them about cybersecurity, talking to them about being aware. Some of the things we do, for instance, we run awareness campaigns internally where we say, when somebody starts with us, we say, tell us your email address. And then we show them, using some of the tools that we've got, where their password has been breached before. And we make that plain to them. We say to them, this is what you could be seeing here. So training and awareness is definitely an important thing. And the third thing I think would be to establish that baseline security. So just look at that baseline of security and look at improvements. Cybersecurity is a board level problem now. It is not something that is just done by the IT person. That's not what this is about. So look at that basic level, think about things like cyber essentials, cyber essentials plus, and actually understand what those mean, and then try very hard to meet those basic requirements. So when you've met those basic requirements, if I can give you a 3.5, improve on them. So do it better next time. Do the first one really well and establish your baseline, and then do it better in the next go round. So that would be my 3.5 things for all manufacturers or anyone listening to this.
There you have it, folks. No longer can you keep your head in the sand. This is a real and imminent threat for you and your business and your customers and employees at large. So take action from this podcast. Benchmark your existing IT estate. Understand where those old legacy systems are and where those risks are. Make your team aware. Train them. Give them general awareness training. Engage with a company like Vertical Structure in order to help you do that. And lastly, make sure you have a baseline security plan in place and a plan to improve it. Simon, thank you very much.
Brilliant stuff. Thank you so much, Mark. And thanks so much for having me along today. It's been great to chat with you.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for tuning into The Digital Manufacturer. We hope that today's conversation has provided some food for thought or sparked new ideas that will help you on your digital journey. To learn more about any of these topics discussed in the episode, head over to our website, www.rubiktech.co. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform to help others join in the digital manufacturing movement. And don't forget to subscribe and turn on notifications so you never miss a future episode. The Digital Manufacturer is brought to you by Rubik, where we're not just talking about the future, we're making it happen. On behalf of everyone at Rubik, thank you for listening.